It's going to be facilitated by the Makita Investment Group. So without further ado, I will turn it over to our guest from Makita.
Great. Well, thank you. And just for the record, I'm Kay Cesarani. I'm Makita, been around for, I guess, 30 years in the industry and been at Makita since 08. Here with Paul and Nilan, my colleague, and we'll be spending some time providing an overview of the 529 industry. And as a reminder for the folks that just showed up, that we all have some trivia questions throughout to hopefully make it a little bit more fun. So we're going to start off on page, well, on my book, it's 87. And oh, I'm sorry, 86. I guess we'll do the trivia question to start things off. So which place doesn't have a 529 plan? A, Hawaii, B, Washington, D.C., C, Wyoming, or D, none of all places have plans? Any guesses? Wyoming, correct. They used to have a plan. They closed it in 2006. Who knows why? They do have an agreement with Colorado where folks can invest in their plan and get the same benefits that they would otherwise. So we're just going to do a walk down memory lane real quick and look at the background of the 529 industry, which is on page 87. And it's not a very pretty page because it's mostly words, but just to, you know, go back in time, these plans were originally created by the states, not by the government, and they really came about due to high inflation and taxes in the 80s. The first plan that came about was in 1986, and it was a prepaid plan for Michigan. And then a decade later is when the format that we have today with 529 plans came into existence with the 529 code. And it really separated and clarified the types of plans between prepaid and savings, which we'll go through in just a few minutes. If we look at the next page, I'm assuming you know what a 529 plan, but this reviews it. It's an educational saving plan. It's operated through a state or state agency or educational institute. They're tax advantaged, and they help families save for education. Originally, it was just for college education, and that's been expanded over the years, and it continues to be expanded. Even over this last year, there were some changes that were implemented that now allow you to use these monies for credentialing. Let's see, what else can we say? Some states have tax benefits for contributions that you make, and some states don't. So Oregon does have a tax benefit. If, oh yeah, you want to read them? Okay.
All right, we're going to go to our true or false. Okay. Over 90% of parents with 529 accounts plan to use their account for undergraduate education. True or false? This is not a trick question. Yes,
I believe that's true.
Correct.
That's true. Yeah.
Correct.
True. And Paul Curley, who's kind of the godfather of data in the 529 world, I understand he presented to you in August, and this was a data point from his presentation. Moving on to the next page, we have listed just some of the new legislation that was passed from HR-1, and we just wanted to highlight it. You've probably heard about it. I think you did hear about it at your last meeting as well. But on the college savings front, there were some changes. Some of this doesn't apply because I don't believe Oregon allows K through 12. So you maybe just ignore those, but other states do allow for it. And then, like I mentioned, the career credentialing programs really have been expanded. So if you're in the biz like we are, if you have your CFA or if you're an actuary or an accountant, you can now use those monies to pay for the certificates that you might need to do for continued education. On the ABLE front, there were also some improvements. The annual contribution limit increased, and then some of the things that were set to sunset became permanent, and those are listed there as well. If we flip to the next page, on page 91, we look at the two different plan types that are in 529. I mentioned prepaid was the original one, and then the original type, and then savings plans came about 10 years later. Although they're really the preferred choice, there's $562 billion at least as of the end of September, in that space. And then on the prepaid side, there's 26 billion. Prepaid plans are where you're prepaying for education units at today's price that you're going to use in the future somewhere. There are only 9 plans that exist today on that side of the equation. And those portfolios are structured differently. They operate more like a DB plan. There's one pot of money that really supports the liabilities of the program, which is unlike the savings side, which are personal investment accounts where people are really using the gains from their personal account to pay for school. Okay, next page.
Question, what are different ways you can contribute to one, payroll deduction, B, the bottle drop program, C, family and friends gifting, D, all of the above? Correct.
All of the above.
All of the above.
And I believe you guys are still the only state that does the bottle drop. Is that right? Yeah. Which I think it's great. And then the next page. So we talked about the saving side of the equation a few pages back. So that bucket is divided up into two different ways that you can invest in these types of plans. There's direct sold investment plans and advisor sold plans. Direct plans are the majority. They make up about 65% of the assets, as well as the accounts in the industry. And then there's the advisor side that obviously makes up the rest. There's about 30 plans on that side. The main difference is you have to go through an advisor, as the name insinuates, on the advisor side. And so they tend to be more actively managed. They might be more complex. They tend to have more options. If you think about the individual options, they usually have around 16 or 17. If you think about the direct plans, they usually have 6 or 7. So if you're building your own, you have a lot less choice. And those all mostly tend to be passively managed. And we expect that trend to persist where direct plans continue to eat away at the advisor market share.
All right. Yeah. Next, true or false statement. Families can only open a 529 account in the state in which they reside.
That's false, but it's deeply troubling.
That is false. You are correct. But there are 6 plans that are only open to the residents. But yes.
And then on the next page, we call it the program players. So we've divided up the different entities that are involved with these type of plans. We're going to start on the left, the state, which you are all. And, you know, that really can be a different structure, different ways. It can be through a state treasurer's office where it's either the treasurer has full authority, where there's an advisory committee or a board, and they make all the decisions. It could be a branch of education. It could be self-financing. And most states in this space do not have dedicated investment staff that only work on this. And part of the reason for that is the way they're structured. You have a program manager and an investment advisor, in your guys' case, where they're responsible for coming up with how the plan should be structured and invested for the underlying funds. And then you can also engage consultants like Makita and Selwood, where we're providing additional layers of oversight. We did go ahead and list on the next page just some general activities of what an investment consultant, which we do, and then also an industry consultant. Some folks might hire a company to do that as well. On page 97, we have listed the statute that gives the board the authority in terms of governing the accounts, as well as the different responsibilities on the right-hand side, which are, you know, a lot of the things we've already talked about: plan design, portfolio construction, amendments to the investment policy. Those are some the bigger buckets in terms of things that you are responsible for. And then on the next page, we have outlined the governing laws. You know, the statute is section OR section 178, and it really gives you the fiduciary authority to run the plan, oversee the plan, and it also touches on the roles and responsibilities. I'm running through these pretty quick, but on page 99, we have your governance structure. This is really the blueprint if you're thinking about how your house is built, if you will. You're at the very top is the state treasurer's office, and then you have the 529 savings board. You guys have the general and fiduciary responsibility of setting the policies and procedures for the plan. And then you also provide the umbrella for all of the parties underneath. So you have Upward Oregon, which is the plan and staff. And then you have Selwood, who's your investment consultant. Vestwell is your plan manager. You're going to hear from them later today. And then you have other folks that provide specialty services. I guess we would fall in that category today as we're providing fiduciary training. And then on the next page, we have the statutes. I won't go through these, but these are the statutes that, govern the program. And on page 101, these are the, again, the different entities involved in terms of overseeing the plan. I think it's important that we point this out, that because it does provide the checks and balances for the plan. Everybody's kind of checking on each other. And it's also important to note that all of this information is provided in your program descriptions for both plans, the ABLE plan and the 529 plan. So everybody knows what the role of each entity is and that it gets updated. So you have your board, who you are, you know what you do. And then you have your plan manager, Vestwell, and you have your investment manager or advisor, which is Selwood Investment Partners, which I will point out here, it's a little bit different. You know, most 529 plans don't have an investment advisor or this type of setup. They don't have a consulting firm providing that type of advice. They usually just use the program manager, or in some cases, the program manager is an investment manager. I think there's only three or four states in with this type of structure, which is really unique, and I think it has served you guys really well. It gives you more flexibility for sure. And then you have your underlying investments. So those are all of the, you know, the different managers that are in the plan. And then your plan custodian is Bank of New York Mellon. And then we'll talk about it a little bit more, but then the way these programs are structured are municipal securities. And I'll talk about it more in a few pages, but it gives you an idea of how those are structured. So next, I'm going to cover some, we call them plan considerations, but they're things just that we think you should think about. And the biggest difference for these types of plans, maybe not so much ABLE, because ABLE is probably even shorter in terms of the investment horizon. Most of the money in those plans is really just transactional. They're just running through the FDIC option. But this, what this chart shows you is the investment horizon for a DC plan, which is the top line where it's much longer. The blue line is your savings. The green line is your spending. And it's about 70 plus years for a retirement plan through that time period. And then if you look at the bottom line, that's your 529 plan. So you can see it's, well, one, very short compared to a retirement plan at around 20 years. And then the decumulation phase is very short. It's only 4 years. And what is also interesting is this assumes people start saving when they are born, and they don't. They don't start saving until they're like six. I don't know what the age is for you, but Brian probably knows. So it's a very short time period for people to save. So the earlier you can get people to save, the better. And I also think it's interesting that even though most people don't save a ton of money. On average, it's about $40,000 if you look at the entire span for a 529 plan. But if you just look at the end, it's, I think, around 60 to 80 grand. But they're not spending it all at once. It's not really enough to cover the full ride for college, but participants are still spreading it out over that four-year period, which I think is really important to note.
Okay, so we will break it up with another question, multiple choice this time. How are mutual funds and exchange traded funds the same? A, is it intraday pricing? B, trades on an exchange? Do they both trade on an exchange? C, investment minimums? Or D, none of the above?
The key word is the same.
Exactly. That's the trick question. ETFs do intraday pricing as opposed to mutual funds, where it's the end of day closing price. ETFs trades on an exchange, whereas mutual funds don't, and it's mutual funds that offer or have investment minimum. D, none of the above. intraday pricing, that means like throughout the day.
It's just like a stock.
So if you,
And the unique thing about those types of funds is, at least in the land of 529 and ABLE, and maybe even on the auto IRA side, is that ETFs, a lot of times, you don't normally need a selling agreement to invest in it. So it's much easier to add it to your platform than going to have some legal agreement with somebody to be in your plan. You can just buy it like a stock or a bond. So next we're going to talk about municipal securities. And this is an important concept to understand because people that are investing in these plans aren't actually investing in the mutual funds or the ETFs or whatever structure you have. They're investing in the municipal security, which the trust creates. So if you look at that those top four boxes, those are the types of investments you have. And those would be the municipal securities that you're creating for. It's been a more recent trend, but where tickers have been assigned to a lot of these. So you might have NASDAQ, you have to pay for it, but they give you a ticker and it makes it easier on the advisor side for them to buy and sell them. But otherwise, you can't really get any information by using the ticker. And then the mutual funds and ETFs, or in some cases separate accounts, are what are held within these municipal securities. So it is an important concept to know, and you're monitoring both. You're monitoring the things below the line, the mutual funds and ETFs, as well as the municipal securities. Oh, that's hard to say, as well. So just an important distinction to understand. And then on the next page, this page has a lot of words, but I like to go over this page as well, because a lot of times people think they think 529 plans are very similar to 401ks just because of the structure that they have, right? They have age base, which is analogous with your enroll or with target date funds, but they are really different. So if you think about just at the very beginning, like who is investing in these things? So a 529 plan is the public, right? Anybody can invest in it for the most part. It's voluntary. So that is a blessing and a curse, right? Anybody can invest in it, but they don't have to. So you have to educate them and make them aware of it. On the 401k side, it's really employees, right? So it's a finite number of people that are, it's more of an opt-out structure. So it's easier to get people to participate in a 401k plan than it is a 529 plan. And the opportunity set for a 529 plan is everybody. You don't just have to invest in your own state unless you're one of those six states that only allows, residents to invest in them. So, it's an opt-out versus a voluntary retail product versus more of an institutional benefit, if you will. And then with that comes, if you're selling it to the public, then you're balancing operational and investment responsibilities. So sometimes because of the operational side, not so much with you guys because of your structure, it's more open architecture. Sometimes you have to sacrifice on the investment side to be able to do the operational side. For example, if you had a program manager that was an investment manager, they like Fidelity or Columbia or somebody like that, they tend to only want to have their products in there. So in that way, you're having to sacrifice a little bit in terms of choice of what investments you're going to have. And then with the structure, there's we looked at fees earlier in the fiduciary section. There's some extra layers built in there. Like if you're just buying a mutual fund, you're just paying the mutual fund expense ratio. But if you're investing in a 529 plan, you're also paying the plan operational expenses, which are state fees and program manager fees. And those can add up and they do make it more expensive, but we believe that's offset by the benefit that you're getting because it's a tax advantaged product. So let's see, what else can I say? So sometimes the business considerations and economics can really dictate the funds that you're in, not so much with you guys because you're more open architecture. And then with that, if sometimes your investment consultant might not have as much latitude. Again, you guys are a little bit different, but if for a lot of the other states we work with, we don't have as much discretion because we have to kind of
play within the sandbox that the program manager sets forth. We can try, but sometimes it's hard just because of those business decisions. The other thing that can happen is you might really want to fund in your program. Let's say it is open architecture. You might really want to fund in your program, but maybe that fund doesn't want to be in your program. So even though the world is open to you, sometimes a different fund will say, we know you like us, but we don't want to be in your program. And then, of course, you know that the account holders can only make changes twice a year in the program for 529.
Funds from a 529 college savings plan can be rolled over to an ABLE account. Is that true or false? Correct.
And that leads us to the ABLE program. Or ABLE market share overview that we're going to go over. So this, we just have a few pages on the ABLE market. And if you look at this page, it's just a snapshot in time of, by plan, not assets, of how things are divvied up. And you can see that most of the pie is with state partnerships. So the ABLE Alliance is 36%. That's the blue piece, stable, which has 23%. And then the ABLE Coalition, which is the Oregon grouping of states, is 10%. 23% are independent and 8% have no plan, which make, there's four states, we'll look at that in just a second, that fall in that bucket. We did highlight a few states that have moved over the years. There really hasn't been a ton of activity this year at the time of printing this, but there has been a lot of things happening in the background on the ABLE side of things, which if we look at the next page, you can see who's in which bucket, which states are in each bucket. So the ABLE Alliance is run by Illinois. That's the lead state, and Ascensus is the program manager. And then you have Stable right next to it in pink. That's run by Ohio. They're the lead state. That's run by Vestwell. The middle, the orange, is your guys' collaboration. Then you have the independent states, and then you have the states with no plan. So Idaho and Wisconsin, those two have indicated or stated that they will be launching a plan in the near term. They're both likely to join one of those first three boxes. And then just the lay of the land in ABLE. So since we printed this, so Pennsylvania went out, which is under the green box with Ascensus. Went out to bid for new, just like you guys do. You go out and you look at like who's the best option for continuing to run your plan. And they switched from Ascensus to Vestwell. I'm not sure when that will be happening, but I think that will be an independent relationship for them. It was one of the larger state participants in terms of dollars too. So that's a big win for Vestwell. If we look at the next page, we can see a listing of all of the different programs or individual states if they're independent. And this gives you just an idea of what the plans look like. So in the middle there, you can see which ones have an FDIC or savings option, who is the provider for that. And then in the middle next to that, you can see how many target risk funds they have, if they have any individual funds, and if they have a money market. And then in the case of Florida, they have, they use their state investment pool for their money market options. So that's a little bit of an outlier. The other outlier is Tennessee. They don't have any target risk funds. They just have 14 individual options. So you just have to figure it out on your own if you're investing in that plan. And then you can see there's a variety of the, in terms of the number of options that plans offer for the target risk. But just as a reminder, most money in these plans is in the FDIC or savings plan.
All right, and then a fun quiz, last but not least. Which Oregon town is widely known as the Christmas tree capital of the world? Is it Salem, Estacada, Eugene, or Silverton? A, B, C, or D? The answer is B, Estacada, harvesting over 2.9 million Christmas trees annually. And Oregon is the top producer of Christmas trees, growing over 4.5 million trees. So, good to know.
Yeah, and that is it. I'm happy to take any questions on 529.
Thank you very much for that. Any questions from the board? Okay, we really appreciate the training, the insight. And we are now chagrined at some of the questions you asked. but we appreciate the engagement. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to gabble in the Oregon. Nope, can't do it yet. Okay.